Susan Vreeland has carved out a special niche for herself. She writes fiction about the lives of painters. Her subjects have ranged from Vermeer and Artemisia to Monet and Renoir. Actually, it's not really the painters she writes about, but the people who know them, their lovers, their models, their neighbors. Vreeland's latest collection of stories called Life Studies caught the attention of Anne Strainchamps.
Well, Susan, you've developed an entire career by now writing fiction about artists. You've got 4 novels, a collection of short stories, more still to come, I think. What is it that draws you so strongly to writing about art and artists?
It's such a wonderful metaphor for so many states of the human condition. I think I also have to say that art has been an influence in my life since childhood. I had a great-grandfather who was a painter. In fact, he is featured in one of the stories, Crayon 1955.
There's a little scene in that short story in which, I'm wondering if it's a real scene, that's something that really happened. Your grandfather holding your hand while he painted a flower.
Yes, that was real. We painted a calla lily together. And that was so remarkable to me that one could change colors on a piece of watercolor paper without a line, you know, like children would color with crayons and then they would have to have a line of demarcation.
Hmm. You spent 30 years teaching high school English, and then you came back to art when you developed lymphoma. Will you tell me something about what art came to mean to you at that time?
There were days early in my treatment when I was under pain medication, and I found it difficult to concentrate or to retain anything that I read. That didn't last a long time, but during that time, I pored over art books. And the placid images of Vermeer, of women alone in their homes as I was, uplifted me and made me feel at peace. And then the Impressionist painters, with their wild splashes of color, gave me joy. And then the Renaissance image, Michelangelo's ceiling of the Sistine, those titanic figures at one with their God, they gave me faith. So art was so very important to me then.
So why did you decide you wanted to write about these artists? Why did you want to go from just reveling in their work, absorbing their paintings? Why write about them?
Well, I think that was natural. But, you know, also, and it was the fascination of imagining a story behind a painting. You know, when I go into a gallery, I don't just see lines and color and impasto and shape, but I see narrative. I imagine the relationships between the artist and the model, for example.
Well, one of the hallmarks of your fiction is your ability to take a single painting, and out of it, you really construct an entire world. And I'm thinking in your recent collection of short stories, for instance, there are entire stories that grow out of just one or two paintings.
That's right.
Like the first one in the book, the one about Renoir's painting, and it's that the painting of the little girl with the watering can?
Yes, that's in the National Gallery in Washington. But I needed to give that child parents, because none of these stories are from the point of view of the painters. Their achievement is not the issue. These are human issues that ordinary people confront. And in this case, her father was confronting a deadening sense of boredom with life. He was a banker and everything looked gray to him. But when he went to this garden party in Montmartre and Renoir was there, and asked to paint his daughter, he saw his little girl with new eyes. And that enlivened him and brought him back to the world of color and love and action. So off he and his wife went dancing at the Moulin de la Galette, which is another Renoir painting.
Yeah, reading some of these stories is a bit like going on a treasure hunt for art, because you've embedded paintings in the stories.
So I love to do that, yes.
Yeah, that particular story, I think I found at least 2 other Renoir paintings in the story, but maybe there are more.
I love to combine paintings in a single story, too, and sometimes only just touch on one. For example, there's a reference to the couple, this banker and his wife, going to a place called La Grenouillère, which means the frog pond, an area along the Seine in the country that was an area of boating and swimming and an outdoor floating dance hall. Both Renoir and Monet painted that area, La Grenouillère, many times. In fact, they declare that that was the spot where Impressionism was born, where they learned to paint the water with broken strokes.
I wanted to ask you to tell me about the inspiration for some of the other stories in this collection.
Oh, yes, okay.
For instance, there's a story about the woman who became Claude Monet's second wife. Did she really live in his house when his first wife was dying?
Yes, absolutely. I wouldn't make up something like that that would soil someone's reputation. They soiled their own reputation. Alice Hochedet and her husband were great collectors. It was her money, but he spent it. And they went bankrupt. At the same time, Monet and his wife Camille were struggling. So the two families joined together and rented a house along the Seine outside of Paris where the rents were cheaper. But the husband of Alice really abandoned her. And even before they had moved in together, Monet had been at the Hochedet mansion to do some painting. And I think it was there that Monet fathered a child. So it was a rather cozy living situation along the Seine.
So there's Monet living with his wife and the woman he once had a brief affair with and his children by his first wife.
And children by both?
Yes.
In both families, all in one cozy situation, while the first wife was dying and the second wife, the wife-to-be, was nursing her. I mean, the two women really loved each other.
There's a scene in that story when the first wife is dying and Monet is sitting by her bed and he begins murmuring notes to himself about the colors he sees in her skin, on her face. It's a beautiful and a horrifying scene at the same time. What made you think of it?
The painting. The painting of his dying or newly dead wife is not fiction. I mean, she is shocked by him painting at this moment. She has just breathed her last breath. And Alice says, Claude, how could you? And he just says, move out of the way. But the children, aren't you anything more than an eye? And he says, this is the point I've reached. It's all I understand. Well, that surely gave me an insight into him. See, some of these lines that I use are taken from what these painters actually said.
You know, throughout this book and in your others as well, artists over and over again ponder the question, why make art? And what are they doing when they paint? In this book, you had a little boy in one story ask the painter Cézanne that question. I was wondering if you could read the answer.
Yes, that's the story called Of These Stones. And the little boy had been influenced by his peers to throw stones at Cézanne and felt regret for it afterwards. And his mother had made him, as a punishment, rebuild a stone wall in Cézanne's property. And he hears the town reviling Cézanne for painting the same mountain over and over again. This is Mont Saint-Victoire. And he asks, why do you paint the same mountain again and again? Anatole watched him take another puff on his pipe. Why does a man pray to God again and again? To know him better. I paint to know the mountain, the spectacle God spreads before our eyes, from every angle, in every season, in sunshine, in shadow, in every circumstance of our lives. It is never the same, yet it is always the same. And always good, like God the Father. Painters need to think of the world as their catechism.
And what about, if we're not talking just about the impulse to make art, but for you, the very strong impulse to live with art, to absorb yourself in art, is that for you also a spiritual impulse?
Oh, indeed, I think it is. Not just out of awe for what painters can produce, but for the sacrifices that they made in order to produce art. For example, way back to my first novel, Girl in Hyacinth Blue, Vermeer realizes that he's never really fully present with his wife because he's always thinking of the painting that he's working on. And so there is a distance between the man and the wife.
So there's a cost to giving yourself to art.
That's right. That's right.
In that one story we mentioned earlier, the one kind of autobiographical story in this crayon, 1955.
Yes.
The grandfather of the little girl says to her as he's dying, look at everything, mm-hmm. always. And I guess it seemed to me that that was really your message in pretty much everything you've written to us. Look at everything.
Oh, I'm pleased that you see that. We miss so much if we don't really look at how the light falls on an object, or the colors of shadows, or the grace of a line. Our lives could be so much more enriched if we really looked, if we tried to practice being painters ourselves. Not that we have to be, but that we try to see how a painter would see.
Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Susan Vreeland's books include Girl in Hyacinth Blue and Life Studies. She spoke with Anne Strangeships.
Have you heard about the painter Vincent van Gogh, who loved color and who led his show now in the music?